Hello and welcome to the Swim Brief. We're back. I know there was a little thing last week that I think many Americans celebrated that interfered with our normal recording time, but we're back. We're refreshed.
U.S. Open?
White Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. I had I just bought a TV 4 months ago, but I needed to buy another TV, much to my wife's chagrin. She's not happy about the second TV purchase, but you know what? I told her, and it'd probably be used against me in the divorce proceedings. You can't always get what you want in life. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, we got plenty of swimming things to discuss today. Before that, I just want to, I've been lax in recognizing the sponsor of this podcast, and that is my employer, Jersey Wahoo Swim Club. You can check us out next week. We got swimmers going to junior nationals, and we'll be at the Lancaster Aquatic Club Keystone Classic, I think is the name of the meet. That's next week. I'll be there with Coach Jake, and we're really excited for some mid-season, invite type meets. And that's that.
So Keystone Classic, is it sponsored by the beer?
No. It's at the Keystone Aquatic Center, Joel, which is
sponsored by the beer.
I think Pennsylvania is just the Keystone State. It's like a Pennsylvania thing, and it's in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, which is pretty much the middle of Pennsylvania.
So once again, swimming missing out on a tremendous marketing opportunity and just
right.
All right.
We've had a lot of eats at the Keystone Aquatic Center, but they have been very generous about hosting meets during COVID. So we've been there many times in the last 2 years. And they're great. It's a great facility, great little trip for us. And we always have a good
time. And a great college beer. Yeah.
And I guess in your day it was a great college beer.
Okay.
You know, we moved on to better things in my video. Let's not get into this. That's the dulcet tones of former University of Milwaukee assistant swimming coach Joel Rawlings. Joel, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm doing great. Thanks. You're all good.
And on the other end, deep in the Speedo bunker.
I thought it was going to be deep in the heart of Texas.
Then we deep could all in the heart of
our little Steve Miller Band homage.
He's ready. Junior Nationals is coming.
Yeah.
Got the boxes stacked up.
Yep. Stacked up pretty high actually right now. So I was out of town for a bit. FedEx kept reminding me the boxes were coming. And I think there's 20 now sitting in my small one bedroom apartment.
And you got about 50 people that are porch pirates for a living outside your door, pissed off. Like every time they steal your crap, it's like, the hell is this?
Right.
What am I gonna do?
That's a $700 tech suit. It's like this? It's women's underwear. What are you talking about? No, that's really valuable. Trust me. It's just black market for it.
No, just thinking about that, like the value of my apartment right now is probably, 60-70 grand in the swimming world. But anywhere else outside of that is probably about $30. The boxes are worth more than the suits there.
It's like when they do a big drug bust, they see the street value is like $4.5 million. You're like, I don't know what street they're on. They're not in Gresham, Oregon, though.
What?
Just saying, it's like they always like inflate these numbers. You're like, it's $60,000 for the suit. It's like you couldn't get $4 for those outside of TJ Maxx. There's like huge bins full of Speedo crap there.
Joel, I can
not Speedo.
I can always count on you for one drug reference
obscure Oregon drug reference. Yeah.
Did somebody told me heroin is legal in Oregon? Is that true? By the way,
dude, I'm in the bunker. I haven't left this place for two years, waiting for Omicron to just finish everybody else off. All right, okay. I don't know what else you're like out there anymore.
You're like Charlton Heston in Omega Man. There's a cultural reference that's really fresh for everybody. Look that up.
We hit Keystone. We hit Omega Man. I don't know what else we have to talk about in today's podcast. Well, I know.
Kayleigh Ledecky. Yeah, I want to get to that first because I think there's nothing that I love more than making the two of you eat crow. And yes, you guys have been on here. You've been attacking the distance queen. Okay. Awful. The awful greatest humans of all time. Yes. Kayleigh Ledecky. It's been personal. Things have gotten really like
heated.
Heated. You've gone right after her.
Yes.
And I think she made a statement yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And that statement was Joel Rawlings does not have any idea what he's talking
right
about.
Right on.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely. I think it's awesome to see. I mean, already at the same Olympics, man, that's, I mean, what, 0.3 off or something like that? That's crazy. That's really, really awesome to see. And really excited. I mean, obviously, it's just the start of it, you know? It's going to be fun to watch.
Did you guys get a chance, either of you, to actually watch the swim? I know there's just been like clips floating around maybe this morning as we...
Just like the last 75 meters.
So what do you think, Eric? How's her stroke? She looking better?
I think there is some improvement. It was from the backside. It was a little bit grainy on Instagram, so it was really hard to tell. Thanks, USA Swimming, for that one.
They must have hired Fina's guy. They must have been like, hey, we need you here to film this races.
Must have had a Groupon. I mean, it just, the way she was closing, there was a little bit of that lope that we saw in Tokyo. And I don't mean necessarily in a good way, but it definitely seemed relatively relaxed. I would have liked to see a little bit cleaner video. I haven't really sought it out yet so far this morning, but I mean, the fact that, like you said, she was 3/10 off of what she went in Tokyo. She looked pretty relaxed going into the wall. I know, I'm sure it hurt. I think I caught a glimpse of her face right after finishing. So it definitely wasn't just a stroll through the park going that 8:12 last night. I'm really excited to see where she goes with this. I think she's in a great place mentally. She's talked about how happy she is with the training environment that she's in, the people that she's training with. So it's going to be fun. I mean, she crushed the last 100 of that 400 free this morning. So for those of you who didn't necessarily catch up on that, she came back in a, was it 58.4. So 8.9.22.20.84. So she negative split her 400 this morning. And if she puts it together tonight, we could see the resurgence of what maybe we saw a handful of years ago.
I think that's awesome. And I mean, you know, to speak to a couple of things you brought up, but she's definitely at the age now where anytime she goes fast, it's going to hurt a lot. Like those days of painless fast swims are just gone when you're in your mid 20s trying to race an 800, I think. And so that'll be a thing for her as long as she competes from now on. We're going to see some incredibly tough races from somebody who's consistently shown themselves to be a tough racer. And I do think it speaks a lot, you know, like a lot of this stuff is relative. I think if I take myself back in time to my expectations before this meet, I'd say that if she had been significantly slower than she was in Tokyo, I still would have gone, oh, that's pretty positive. She's, you know, she went 8:19 yesterday. I'd be like, oh, you know, she's looking pretty sharp post Olympics. I'm sure she took some time off and it's like, this is a good putting one foot forward. So to have her just be right on where she was, it's obvious to me that beyond, you know, the details of any training environment, because she hasn't really been there long enough for the training, quite frankly, that she's doing to have a big impact. But she must be in a really decent place mentally. And of course, as you mentioned, she spoke to that a bit.
I think the interesting thing too with this, like you said, 28, like I remember just back in like even 2000, seeing on coaches' clinics that are talking about like when peak power comes for men, when peak power for women comes in, when peak aerobic capacity comes in for men and women. And I'm, you know, you kind of wonder now, like all those studies, were they based on basically, you know, swimmers and a lot of endurance athletes, you end your career at 21, you know, in your college. And now with professionalism and the be able to monetize a sport like this, you know, is all that data going to start to change a little bit? Where all of a sudden you see the peak power, you know, obviously like a Tom Brady or LeBron James and Katie Ledecky, where it's people start going, well, this is an old athlete. Can they keep doing it? It's like, well, maybe the old studies were off and that we need to reevaluate. And I'm sure they are reevaluating, restudying, you know, the power potential of people in their mid to late 20s as far as women go, and even men into their early 30s now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think that's enough on that topic. I want to address next. One of the sponsors of Swim Swam is ACC. No, not the conference, but the American College Connection. And in all fairness, before I even start discussing this, and many of your listeners will know that just based on my general demeanor, that I'm probably going to be critical of them. I did apply for a job at American College Connection once upon a time and didn't, however I want to phrase it, didn't end up doing any work for them in the end. I since, and maybe for some time prior, have not been a terribly huge fan. We'll try to link to the article, but it's an article on Swim Swam and basically is an attempt to be informative to say, hey, you know, the college recruiting calendar has expanded and here's some information you should be sending and here's when you should be sending it. But in my opinion, there's actually a marketing tactic going on here, which is intended to capitalize on some of the anxiety that people are feeling about this expanded recruiting calendar, to go like, oh my God, I didn't send any college coaches my forearm circumference in my freshman year of high school. And now I'm way behind in the process. If only I could pay, you know, $3,000 for somebody to stay on top of this stuff for me. I'm finding myself not particularly appreciative of it. And I think a lot of the stuff I want to counter some of the stuff that they include in there, because, you know, it was a joke about forearm circumference. That's not on there, but they've got things like shoe size and height and weight and all this stuff. Basically, to explain to anybody listening who's maybe considering working with American College Connection, on the other end of it, the college coach end of it, they were definitely emailing you, right, Joel, when you were a coach at Whitewater, you getting some emails?
All the time.
Yeah. So generally what they do is send emails for you. They advocate for your kid to college swim coaches. Most coaches I knew found them to be highly annoying. And so to me, that sort of defeats a little bit of the value proposition, because the value proposition is like, hey, it's a competitive environment out there and we're going to give you a leg up. Well, to me, that's nullified when the person on the other end is like, I don't want to be bothered with this. And the other part of it that I think, I believe that they are, you know, selling basically will get you into your dream school. The problem with that is if they actually achieve that outcome, but they were dishonest, and I found several instances when I was working with them where I thought they were pretty dishonest about a kid I was recruiting, then they've essentially nullified their value if they sort of push you over the top to a place that's not actually the right place for you. So I've got some issues with it. You guys can have your own reactions. Eric, as somebody who hasn't been a college coach for some time, maybe you've had some kids that have utilized recruiting services, or you just in general have an opinion about this.
Oh, I mean, I look at it and there's definitely some information that's important, at least knowing that you can't wait until, you know, the fall of your senior year anymore to find your school. Like if you have any part of you is seriously considering swimming at a high level, especially D1, you have to be acting a bit earlier than in the past. I mean, my biggest thing, and looking at it from, like you said, you're being a college coach recently at Joel too, is like, you don't necessarily want or need to hear from a third party. It's just, I don't know. I have a hard time thinking about it. If I'm putting myself in the shoes of a college coach, like I don't want mass emails from a service. I want to hear directly from a swimmer. That I want to hear how they speak, how they might write an email, things like that. And I've helped swimmers that I've coached in the past that some of them I don't coach anymore, but they still asked me, you know, can you read this email and let me know as a coach, how does it read? And, you know, very honest with them. And, but that's kind of the long and short, it should be driven. There's a couple other services that are out there. I think, I can't remember who she is. She runs it, but she has the kids. She kind of lays out the format and the kids have to drive it. It's up to them to do all of the communication. The only time where maybe that third party could come into play is when you hear some of the stories about like your scholarship expires in 3 hours, or it's like, you know, having some kind of idea as far as what they're offering versus what might actually be available.
Shots fired at Braden Holloway, by the way. Eric taking on again, his old rival right away. Wow. Unbelievable.
But again, that's just, I mean, it's a matter of letting the swimmer drive the conversation. You shouldn't have to jump in and be like, no, this offer is not good enough for my swimmer, because then you're essentially becoming an agent. And then it gets really, really gray. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a couple times when the Rick Payne, who runs, and I was coaching at Georgia Tech, Rick Payne, who runs ACC, got in and tried to negotiate scholarships with us. And I can tell you, it was a huge turnoff on our end to have a third party involved. Although, you know, to be fair, I do think there is sort of a power imbalance when it comes to negotiating some of these scholarships, where the coaches have done it maybe hundreds of times and the athletes, this may be the only time them and their parents participate in a negotiation like that. So there's definitely sort of a knowledge imbalance. Joel, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, I think, what you're saying is absolutely right. The weird thing is just how much recruiting has changed. And just, I've been out of college coaching like 3-4 years only. I was a D3 at the end and D1 to the start. And the recruiting was always obviously different with that. And for Division 3, it was like, I didn't need a video. It's like, whatever the time is, that's the time I kind of would like to see. And if it looks crappy, that's what, even as a guy who likes, you know, really probably goes too far into technique, I'm like, I don't care what a 20.8 looks like, 50 freestyle. I would like that on my team, please. You know, it's like, you know, I don't care if he's doing it however well. So if he's doing it side stroke, that's fine. That's great. But I think that's and that's what they always try to sell you on, is like, you know, that kind of rare unicorn, never lifted weights, 6'5", size 18 shoes, but it weighs 110 pounds. Obviously huge amounts of growth potential here. You know, they're always selling kind of that used car, and you get inundated with all these services and all these emails. And it doesn't mean the kid's actually interested in your school. And so you end up just going delete, delete, delete. You get, you know, these kids from Lithuania sending out mass emails to wherever they'll go. Like, yeah, we're interested. Great. I need full scholarship to come in there. Like, you know, delete,
We don't give those at Whitewater.
Yeah. Or even some of them, again, where they, I feel somewhere along the line that it was, like you said, disingenuous to the kid, where you're like, those times aren't good enough to get a scholarship at any level anywhere. And, you know, you don't want to be like, you know, the bad guy coming in and have to tell them this, but at some point it needs to be known that, like, this is what, you know, there's a range the college is looking for, you know? And so we all kind of know our wheelhouse. We know the areas where we can recruit from the best. We know the times that we're going to do well with, you know, the type of kid and the majors we're going to do well with. And those don't always fit. It's like, there's just so many layers that go with it, whether it's the town you're recruiting to or the school, et cetera. But obviously, like I was saying, in the 3-4 years now, it's all changed where it's now more speculative recruiting, where it used to be women, like whatever their times they were doing in high school, you want to just kind of sustain that time and go on. So you kind of, you'd give scholarships based on what they've done. With guys, there's a little more scholarships were based on what you think they can do, what their potential they can do. And now it's all about the potential because you are recruiting 9th graders, 10th graders, yeah, and 8th graders, even to the point where you're like, you know what women are coming up that are 8th grade. Cause again, it's like this funnel of max performance. They're already in that funnel. Guys, you guys, they're late bloomers and you're just guessing. It's all you're doing is you're doing your best guess of whatever it could be. So you're gathering up data and things. And so I think the value of the service is obviously just showing people the amount of different schools out there that anyone can swim. There's a fit for anyone at any point. You know, when you start bringing scholarships or anything like that, that's when you really are just lying to the people. And that's why I think even the club teams that go, you know, we've got this many people with scholarships, don't even mention the money. Because I mean, what it should be is that their dues for your swimming program are they're getting healthy, they're making friends, they're learning a lot about themselves. And if there's something else at the end, that's awesome. But it's not about some sort of little investment where we're going to, you know, a few $1,000 could be $75,000 later. And I think right. That's kind of the what they're sticking on those TVs that they're selling now. And that's, like you said, is a little disingenuous because you don't know. Like we were about to talk about with Texas giving out money. How many Division I teams are even going to start to do that anymore? They might go, you know what? Why don't we just go the UW Green Bay route? No coach. We'll just pay for a bus, yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, and it's one of those things where people be like, oh, that's ridiculous. Like, well, I think there's a lot of things that 20 years ago we would have said is ridiculous, but are happening now. You know, I definitely like esports, you know, becoming a college thing. Oh, that's not going to happen. We're there, yeah. You know? And so you really can't predict much of the future. So they have to focus more on what they can control. And like Eric said, controlling the ability to do stuff.
Yeah, we lost your video there for a second, but
sorry, yeah.
Yeah,
So, you got to control what you can control. Look at schools, set yourself up to get in school. Don't worry about the swimming part as much because, like you said, the anxiety is just overwhelming.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the last word I want to say this, and I didn't want to talk about what you hinted at, teased there with Texas, is, you know, all this stuff, it's very marginal. It's very, very marginal. Being good in the recruiting process, I believe makes a marginal difference for you. And I know everybody wants that extra 1 or 2%, but again, to return to another thing you said, if you're fast enough that you're going to make a big difference for the school, you could start the process in fall of your senior year and they'd go, oh, we'll find a spot or scholarship or whatever. They'll figure it out. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like being Brad Pitt. Like, I wonder if I'm going to get an acting job. You'll be okay.
Yeah, we'll find a way.
I don't think the offers are coming in. You know, it's just not happening. Yeah, if you're a good looking dude at the bar, you're gonna do okay. Don't worry about it.
Brad Pitt's like, I wanna play the Secretary of Defense. Okay, yeah, no, we can make you that. Yeah,
yeah,
we'll put you in.
Whatever you want.
All right. Speaking of Texas, he's not from Texas, isn't he? He's like from Tennessee,
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, close enough, you know, right over the border. Oh, Matthew McConaughey is from Texas.
Right.
And apparently not running for governor. But anyway, University of Texas just came out and said, hey, we're going to pay all our athletes the $6,000 that we're legally entitled to pay them. And perhaps there's even hinted at there's even more on the way. For this just kind announced. Of stuff. Yeah, that they're fundraising for some NIL disbursements. So obviously this is a very dramatic, big attention grabbing move. As you referenced, Joel, not a lot of people will be able to match it. We tried to play a little game here in the office with Shackelford, you know, looking up the basically who had a lot of athletic revenue as a sort of backwards way of figuring out who would try to match this. And, you know, it looks like it'd probably be Texas and some SEC schools.
SEC, yeah.
It's going to be an SEC Ohio school State. Soon anyway. So and Ohio State and maybe Michigan and, you know, who knows. But It's a big deal. I'm kind of at a loss for words. So I'm hoping that Eric has a few words to share on this.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out. I mean, it's going to start here in the spring. So we're going to get a real idea as far as how it's coming through. So there was a little bit of arguing in the Swim Swam comment thread as to who is actually eligible for this money, meaning do you have to be on scholarship in order to get this extension, or if it's anybody who's within the athletic department. You know, if it is anybody that's on scholarship, then I mean, if you're a swim coach, you're starting to look at, if I give this kid books, does my athletic department give him $6,000? Then I'm going to give him books so I can get him to this university. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out. Yeah, it was announced that Texas just said that they have $10 million earmarked fundraised for the NIL situation. So they're going all in. Obviously, it's going to be weighted towards, you know, your distance lane and maybe women's cross country, and everybody else just kind of got it up for grabs. But, you know, in all honesty, swimmers aren't going to see much of that money. You know,
sure.
If a swimmer ends up making 1/10 of a reserve O lineman, then I think they're in a good spot.
Right.
You know, because other than that, nobody cares. Yeah. Be the quarterback and the guy who blocks his blind side and a couple other odds and ends, but
Joel, is this good? Is this bad? What are we meant to think?
I think if you're one of those guys that just enjoys to watch the world burn, I think this is great. And let's just see the nuclear proliferation, where that who's going to go bankrupt first kind of a thing. But again, the SEC schools, they just have ATMs and they're just kind of printing kind of money. It'll be interesting to see who's just like, you know what, we're not even going to play. My wife went to Stanford and you know, we get the alumni magazine, and years back when they first started talking about paying athletes, they're like, well, you know, there's a good chance what we'll do is we'll pull out of that. We just won't do it. We'll go the Ivy League model. And, you know, again, it's prestigious just to go to Stanford or Harvard or Yale. It's like, why should we pay? You know, and I think sometimes as swim coaches, we always look at it from our perspective of, well, you've got a great swim team though. But again, it's like, you know, no one's going to go to Stanford because they have a great sailing team or a great swim team, except for the people that are on that team.
Right.
You know, and so it's not going to affect their ability to get people in the door. Again, this is like Eric was saying, this is about kind of football and basketball and things. And so how it all pans out will be interesting. I remember like years back, like when Batman came out, they're talking to one of the guys who had a minor role in it. He's like, he's looking like, oh my God, I get a cut of all the merchandising. And then the fine print is like, yeah, you get the merchandising for your character. So, oh yeah. So I see a lot of kids running out buying the reporter, you know, action figure, you know, it's like, yeah, there's people that are going to get the money. It's probably not the ones that we would think of. You're like, well, Katie Ledecky's got to get the money. It's like, yeah, maybe she would have, I don't know. Maybe she wouldn't have, because again, a lot of this money is going to go towards, you know, those kind of revenue producing sports, and how the NCAA might be able to step in if they have any power at all anymore would be about like trying to make it gender equitable, where all of a sudden the volleyball and the basketball players start getting a lot of the money, you know, because they might have something where it has to offset. But as far as it trickling down to swimming, you know, you get 10% of the gate revenue. There you go. So basically your own mom is still giving you allowance money because they're the ones coming to the meet, I guess, is how it'd probably work out.
Mom, buy two programs.
You get a hot dog, I get a nickel.
I need to get some Keystone this weekend. Buy two programs.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I think we've gone through that one. We want to finish, I think, here with a philosophical conversation, because I don't know about you guys, but I consider myself a bit of a warrior philosopher, you know, in the classical tradition. And
sorry, and I couldn't often, say that. Often say this about you.
Yeah. They're often texting on the thread that I'm not on and going, yeah, that right. Chris, he's a real warrior philosopher, you know?
Yeah.
That's why he does the things he does. And anyway, so I want to talk about Coach's Watch. This is a subject I'm gonna clinch on this one. I want to ask you guys for your opinions first, but I'm just gonna start with the definition of what Coach's Watch is, and that's basically this. And I've definitely been guilty of this. I think just because I have an itchy trigger finger on my stopwatch. So the idea that your coach is timing you in practice, and the time that they're giving you is, let's say, not authentic to what a true electronic timing system would produce. Either they're pushing they're starting the watch a little late, or they're stopping it a little early, or maybe a combination of both. And then they're telling you the time they see. And, you know, I think the motivation behind doing this, oftentimes I see that coaches want to validate the effort of the athletes, what they're doing, and sort of give them a confidence boost to say, like, hey, you're going really fast. Here's the evidence, like, because I just timed you. And guess what? The time was fast. And therefore, you know, believe in yourself, whatever. Eric, I'll go to you first. What do you think of Coach's Watch?
I've used it situationally.
Okay.
But it's never been more than a tenth of a second or so. And it's never been something with gravity. So, like, for example, get out swims, 100% honest, over 15 years, I've never lied about a get out swim.
Never intentionally. Look, but I'm saying I've done it. I think I've done it unintentionally a lot of times, but you're saying you've never intentionally.
When it comes to get out swims, I don't believe in that aspect of it that I have a hard time with, because that's a big thing. Like if you do that on a get out swim and it's significant, and then all of a sudden the kid turns around the next meet and lays an egg, and then you got to answer for it. And it's just that there's a lot of unintended consequences. When it's like, when it comes to stuff you're doing 25s from the blocks, you're timing four kids, you kind of miss the finish, or you're not sure on the finish, and your watch says 12.02. And it's like, I'm pretty sure I was a bit off on that finish. I'll go 11.99. Yeah. You know, I've done that where it's been really, really incremental. There are times where I've been doing a lot of timing, and I got this from Joel when we were at Milwaukee together. It's like timing at meets and like doing 25s from the blocks during warm-up and actually saying times is pretty, I don't know. There's a lot that could go wrong there. So it's just a matter of, you know, do you direct a way to get the kid to go faster and then tell them the time of the one that they improved upon? You know, you're not trying to freak them out one way or another. But I don't see a lot of value in really making a significant change in somebody's time at a practice, and like somehow it's going to, you know, the seas are going to part and they're going to become this amazing swimmer because you gave them a half a second leeway at a time. And, you know, I don't know if the kids want that dishonesty. Like, I can't imagine being like, oh, so you made up that time that I went at practice last week. Why would you do that? Like, that just, I would be really frustrated as an athlete knowing my coach was lying just to try to get me to do something or validate something. I think
everyone wants to be lied to. I just don't think people want to know they've been lied to. I'm all for being lied to. Yeah. I would love for people every day to say I'm good looking. And I know that's not actually truth. Just right. As long as I don't know it's true. I'm all for living in a lie. I'm all for lies and deceit. I coached college, for God's sakes. I recruited kids. Of course, I think you're a great swimmer. You're doing awesome. You'd be a great fit. I'm all for it. It's just, it's why not? You know, it's, again, it's like,
we love you, Joel.
I remember a kid once, she in a 50 freestyle. This is back in the day where it wasn't the digital board. It was like the boards would flip. One of the numbers didn't flip. You know, she does well. It gets a lifetime best time. But on the board, it was 0.2 off of her best time ever. Has a meltdown, starts crying, calls ex-boyfriend, doesn't want to come back, wants to quit the sport. And is like, it was it was a timer. It's just the time is this. It registered that. It's a 0.2 difference. The time's actually in the computer, right? And all of a sudden, everything's sunshine and roses again. You're like, kids are so disengaged with most of their swims anyway. Yeah, lie. I don't get, you know, some kids I would lie the other way and tell them they're going much slower just to get in their head. And they were kids where they did much better that way. They swam so much better when they're angry at me. They're so much better when they're angry about something. Like, yeah, you're looking terrible. This is not good. And the kid would swim lifetime best after that. I'm like, you know, if it ends up being an FU coach swim, more power to them. I don't care. I just want them to swim fast. If they think they're swimming fast, they'll swim fast. A tenth of a second.
Know your athlete before you venture into Joel Rowley's
seriously,
territory.
Before you start doing the negative coaches watch.
I'm going to be pressing buttons. Yeah, it's like, you know how many times, like, back when you're coaching, like, you just trying to hit, like, 0.01 on your watch. You can't do it. I mean, so basically, like, statistically speaking, one time on a watch, I'm going to be off. I don't know what direction. Yeah. I always looked at it as kind of like it followed your personality. Like, I was always trying to be a little more sunshine. I had another coach who was a lot more cynical than I was, which is a weird thing to have on deck with me. And his was always slow. And so basically, like, one of those things, like, you tell the kid, what do you want to hear today? You want to hear the sunshine, or do you want to hear the rain? Like, right. There you go. Go to him. He'll give you closer to the truth than I will. I'm going to lie to you, kid.
You're going to give us this name once we go off air, because I'm curious who is more cynical than you.
Right. There was at one point, one of the most uncomfortable moments I had a fifth year on deck and this assistant coach, and I was the most positive person there, and it freaked me out. Yeah. I felt really bad for the kids that day. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't even know what to say.
You're welcome. So
people who have been maybe reading or listening to me for a long time probably know the story I'm about to tell, but it's worth retelling, I think, in this context.
I think we'll be the judge of if it's worth retelling or not, right, but go ahead. Yeah.
But when I was in graduate school, as with many graduate programs, I had to write a thesis, and I literally wrote a thesis on Coach's Watch because I was studying positive psychology. And the father of positive psychology, Martin Seligman, was one of my professors. And he bragged offhand about how he had done a research study. And by the way, you can go find this research study. It's a real study that he did with University of California, Berkeley swimmers, and North Thornton and his wife, I believe, actually are co-authors on the study. And Marty would often brag that Nort called him from like the 1988 Olympics or something for relay advice. I have no idea whether that's true. Nort Thornton, of course, sadly has passed away, so we can't ask Nort anymore whether that's actually a real thing that happened. But of course, I was hooked by the reference. And he actually, his study way back in 88 was on a negative coach's watch. So what they did was, he was doing research into optimism. This was before positive psychology was even a term. And he had developed this theory of optimism, and he had like an optimism test, basically a personality assessment that would spit out on the other end whether or not you were optimistic or not. So he gave this test to all the swimmers at Cal. And this is me just sort of paraphrasing the experiment. Then they actually had a coach's subjective assessment of the optimism of the athletes. So both those measures were used to determine who was, quote, optimistic and who was not. And then they had this group of, you know, hyper elite swimmers swim either a 100, a 200, or a 400 freestyle. And I believe that for the hundreds, they were told they were 1 second slower than they actually were. So they were told times that were a second slower than what they actually did on this maximum effort. For a 200, it was 2 seconds. And for the 400, it was 4 seconds was what they chose. And there's a whole heartbreaking passage where they described the reaction of some of the swimmers who had a similar reaction to the swimmer you described with the 0.2 off. You know, there were literally people just sobbing in tears on the pool deck by how poorly they had performed on it. And then, of course, there were people who according to Seligman and the sort of conclusions of the paper, who were highly optimistic and just sort of like, was like, oh, I guess that was bad, but probably doesn't mean anything. I'll do good on the next one. And so they gave him like an hour break and they went to step up again. And, you know, the conclusions of the study was that, you know, the optimistic swimmers actually did a little bit better on the second one. So being told that they were slower than they actually were somehow correlated to doing better on the ones, the ones that didn't code as optimistic completely cratered on the second repetition. They thought, yeah, that's true. I do suck. And I'll prove it by swimming even slower than I did the first time. So I had read this whole thing and I said, well, that's not actually what swim coaches do, right? I knew about coaches watch. So I said, why don't we study what coaches actually do, which is lie to swimmers about that they're going faster than they were. So we set up the whole experiment in reverse. I got consent from all the athletes that I coached at the University of Pennsylvania. And we set up to do a whole practice. Unfortunately, my boss, University of Pennsylvania, still swimming head swimming coach Mike Schnurr, was not the best research assistant that I've ever had. So, and one of the problems he had was he had no ability to keep anything a secret. So the whole point was that they weren't supposed to know, but he kept on sort of like hinting like, yeah, we're doing an experiment today. We're gonna see how you feel about these times we're giving you. So we go to do the experiment and I didn't count, but there were enough swimmers for me to know that the whole thing was botched, because we gave them the times, the faster than they went times, and the swimmers were just coming up and they're going, you're full of shit. Now I'm swearing on my own podcast. You're full of it, basically. That's not true. We know you're lying to us. So I never got any kind of decent data on whether or not coaches watch in that experiment had any impact on how people did. And I had to write a 40-page thesis basically being like, ah, I did this thing and who knows what it says.
Well, if you're going to do a thesis on a story with no payout and your co-host reaction to it, my reaction is like, so we sat through that just so you'd have like, and we had no results on the back end of what we wanted to know. Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
Hey, listen. I've never pretended to be a scientist except for that one time.
Or a storyteller.
It confirmed to me why I shouldn't be. I said I was a warrior philosopher, not a storyteller, Joel.
We're the warrior sitting through that. Come on, man.
You got any more drug references you want to do before we get off? Or
now we're good.
Okay.
We're good. Yeah.
Cool. Eric, anything?
I don't have any drug references either.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. You should keep it that way. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks for watching YouTube videos. Thanks for being patient with us as we have a week interruption. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next week.
See you all in Austin.
Yep. Say hello to Eric in Austin if you see him, but not too many of you, okay? Don't overwhelm him.
Single file line.
Yeah, that's right. One at a time. Wear your mask. Mm-hmm. Bye.